What up, everyone? Welcome back to the Pause Rewind Play podcast. We got Casey, Josh, and Vince in the house. And as always, we're here to talk about movies. Before we get going, I just want to make sure and remind you, you can give us a follow over on Instagram at Pause Rewind Play, over on Twitter at Pause Rewind Pla, on our website at prppodcast.com. You can just follow us via the WordPress site. And check us out on YouTube. Give us a listen over there as well and a follow or a subscribe. Hit that subscribe button, like button, thumbs up, all of those things. Because, you know, we want to grow our fan base over there. So, yeah, let's get going with this podcast. Before we get going, Josh, what have you been watching this week?
I have been watching, besides this movie, literally only one thing. And it is The Good Doctor. And The Good Doctor is kind of getting worse as it goes along, but I still dig it, and it's still definitely super cool, and I like it. So I just finished season 2, so I've got one more season that's left on Hulu, and then I have to find out after that what's going on, like if there's more live seasons or anything, so I have no clue.
Yeah, what do you mean by getting worse?
I don't know. I just like dug the first season like super hard. Like it was definitely really good and it raised a lot of like different like ethical questions and stuff, but like not in a super political way because I hate a lot of times when shows can get too political. I think it's important to do some things and show support for some stuff, but when it's like even though I'm still watching it because I've invested however many seasons, like Grey's Anatomy, like I can't stand it hardly anymore because every single episode is like a political stance on something. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, I don't dig this anymore. But like it has like a few stuff like that in there and it's cool and has some cool ethical questions and kind of makes you think about a lot of different stuff. And it's very interesting medically and everything like that. But it's just kind of like degrading and I'm just kind of like not understanding where a lot of the character arcs are going and there's some stuff that's not making sense, but they're still doing some big and bold stuff that I'm still liking. Obviously I'm still watching it, so I think it could definitely be better, but I am still liking it to the point where I have not given up on it like I did with Dark. Sorry Trevor or anyone else who listens to this who likes and loves Dark. I kept trying to push through, even like the final season, I was just like, there's a lot too much that I like just don't understand. And even when I try to like put it all together, I just get confused and still don't understand the story. So even though apparently it's like building up to some huge finale, I stopped like 2 episodes from the very end and I just haven't.
Oh, wow.
I just haven't even watched those last 2 because they're hour long episodes each. And I'm just like, I don't think I want to do it. Every time I go to do it, I'm like, nope, we're going to watch The Office or something else instead. So I feel kind of bad about that, but you know. So yeah, that's it. I've literally just been watching The Good Doctor, and I watched our movie this week as well. What about you, Vince?
Did I talk about Carnival Row last week?
I don't think so.
Okay, no. Have you heard of Carnival Row?
No.
It's on Amazon. It's good. I binged it hard. It's only 8 episodes on Amazon. It's starring Cara Delevingne and Orlando Bloom. It's a very interesting world they created, filled with like mythical creatures like minotaurs and pixies and, you know, fairies and werewolves, that kind of stuff. But with the storytelling and political drama of Game of Thrones, you know.
Ooh.
A great little love scene between Orlando Bloom and Cara Delevingne. And like I said, the world that they created is just very, very interesting. And it was recommended to me. I dropped in and finished it within a week, like really, really fast. Like I said, only 8 episodes, hour long piece. Really interesting. And really, if you like Game of Thrones, it really scratches that Game of Thrones itch. Because there's lots of like I said, political drama, lots of other stuff. I don't want to go into it because it might be a little bit of a spoiler, but I finished it and I texted my sister who recommended it to me. And I was just like, if you like this, you'll like Game of Thrones. You should probably give it a chance because she still has never watched Game of Thrones. But it was really good. I was really impressed with it. I don't really watch a lot of stuff on Amazon. And so I have a lot to catch up on over there. And that was the first little dabble into it that I got. I think next up on the list over there is probably Hannah.
I haven't heard of this one, but I also don't know anything about Hannah. So give us a quick synopsis of what the heck Hannah is.
Oh, it's good. I watched the first episode and maybe two, and I haven't been back, but I saw the movie when it came out a while back, and I'm pretty sure it's based on a book. Essentially, it's about a little girl and her dad, and I don't want to like spoil the mystery, but they're being chased by the government for some reason, and the series starts, and the movie also starts with them hiding out in like the deep, deep forest, and him just training her to be a killing machine because he knows that there's no way that the two of them are going to be able to survive and like with a normal life in society without being chased down by this government entity that wants the little girl Hannah back. So it's just like it's an action flick or action series, but it's also kind of seeing the world through the eyes of a little girl who goes her first like 14 years of her life away from everything, you know, living in a cabin, never seen technology, never tried a candy bar, sees an airplane in the sky, and she knows what all these things are because her dad teaches her like through books and stuff, and like he has like lessons, so she's not dumb when it comes to it all, but she's never actually experienced it. And so in the movie, I haven't gotten into the show, but in the movie, it's just like you're experiencing life through the eyes of this little girl who was raised to be a killing machine, genius killing machine. And I really liked the movie. It's a little artsy, but it was a good action movie, and it's really well cast. And the first episode or two of the Amazon series that I watched, it is as long as the movie, and it barely covers the intro of the movie, you know, so it really gets down in depth on what's going on. It's really good.
So this kind of like gives me like Room vibes mixed with like Red Swan or whatever. That not is it Red Swan is that what it
I
is
don't know. I don't know what that is, but it kind of is like Room, except for she wasn't taught that there was nothing else, you know. She was taught that there is a bigger world, and these are all the things in the bigger world. But until you're ready, like the dad keeps telling her, you know, like if we ever want to join society, we're going to have to kill this one person who knows we're still alive. And she's like the lead of this like government deep state thing, you know. I don't know. Maybe that's not the right word, deep state. I don't know. Government entity that's like controlling. I don't know. Watch it. Check it out. Check out a trailer. It's really good. The original movie has what's her name? Yeah, from Lady Bird.
Saoirse Ronan?
Yeah, yeah. It's the first thing I ever saw her in.
Did you see Upload? Yeah.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I did. Oh, okay. Actually,
I was gonna say, I was like, if you're doing Prime, I was like, that's one that I would say to check out.
Yeah, yeah. It was fun.
Nice. That's rad. Sounds interesting. I could get into it.
Yeah.
Guys, I like crashed post this 30-day movie challenge. I'm kind of like taking a break from watching movies in a way. But last night I was like flicking through my Disney Plus because there's a lot of nuggets on there that are just kind of appearing right as they get their rights back to their movies. And freaking Prince of Persia was on there, the Sands of Time movie. And because we talked the video game movie Warcraft before, I was like, Prince of Persia like kind of held a place on the shelf for a while, like where it was like, this is the video game adaptation of a movie to beat. It was the best one. Like it beat out Tomb Raider, it beat out a number of other things. And so I was kind of like, okay, I'm gonna get in, I'm gonna watch it, should be sweet. And I'm not gonna lie to you, I had forgotten so much about the film, but it was really good and enjoyable. It almost felt like what do you want to call it, like a Pirates of the Caribbean cousin film type thing. Like it was as if it kind of had the same vibe to me. And so it was a ton of fun just to kind of watch. And Gyllenhaal is like the Prince of Persia was pretty good. Yeah, it was fun. It was like parkour in the desert, man. It was tight. And so it was a ton of fun.
It definitely has that Pirates of the Caribbean vibe. That's a good comparison there.
Right. I did a blog post about it today because I was like feeling, I was like, gotta talk about this.
I haven't seen it since theaters, so does it beat Warcraft?
No. No, there's some sections of it that are pretty poor. Just watch it again. You should get on Disney Plus. I can give you my login information if you don't have it, but it needed a little bit of oof at times, but it was like enjoyable. Like for a video game film, like a video game to movie adaption from 2010, they were very ambitious with it, and some parts paid off, I feel, and other parts were like, ah, you were found wanting. Like, you know, so. And then, just so you guys know, I watched about 25 hours of YouTube this week.
Solid. Anything specific?
I watched this YouTuber called Bald and Bankrupt. Do either of you know about him?
No.
So Bald and Bankrupt is this Englishman, and he's going around. I think he lives in the former Soviet Union somewhere, and he just goes around and tours old Soviet villages, like, and looks for all the old Soviet architecture still intact, and like he just goes and gives you kind of like a cultural immersion into some of these places. I think I've watched all of his YouTube videos now, except for like maybe two or three. And it's a ton of fun. I'm not gonna lie to you. That seems like something I would enjoy doing. He just walks around with a GoPro. He speaks Russian, and so he can like interact with people. But he goes and just—it's just a ton of fun. He's like super cool. I found him randomly one day when I was like researching stuff about the Soviet Union, and it was like Bald and Bankrupt, looking at an old Soviet store, and then now here I am watching a ton of Bald and Bankrupt. So cool. Yeah, other than Prince of Persia, you know, Bald and Bankrupt, and watching a little bit of, you know, Rick and Morty, Grey's Anatomy, and Parks and Rec, I haven't really been watching anything else besides this movie we did. So yeah, I'm gonna do a shout out here. If you guys want to watch a YouTube series, just click on the Bald and Bankrupt playlist and click play all and just have an enjoyable time. Here it is. Funny British, like, comparisons to the former, to Europe, the Western world, and the Soviet Union. So it's super cool. So
there you go.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, now that I've blabbered on and we've all talked about our week in movies and film, should we get down to the film that we're watching this week? Josh, you chose. Do you want to give us a little introduction into Searching?
Of course. So Searching, for those of you who have not heard of it or seen it, is, and I'll let Vince do some movie facts because he probably has it lined up a little better than me, but it's a 2018 film that stars John Cho, and basically it takes place entirely on screens. So even though there's camera movement and stuff, it takes place entirely like on a digital format. Like the screen is, it's like either a laptop screen or an iPad or just something like that. So everything happens on the screen. And it seemed like very like different, but also very new and sort of like a really interesting sort of technology movie. And the director, like, we'll get into who they are and everything, but the director, he had not really done a movie before. He had shot Google commercials before he did this movie. And this movie was sort of his like real like directorial debut. And it was super interesting, and, you know, people ended up liking it, I think. So before I keep going into too much of it, let's just run down the movie facts. Vince, how's that sound?
Yeah, that sounds good. So the director's name is Anish Chaganti. Is that how you say it, Josh?
Hopefully.
Sure.
Sorry, Anish, if it's wrong.
And the movie was written by him and someone named Sev Ohanian. It was released August 31st, 2018. Had a budget of only $880,000 and went on to gross $75 million. Little fun fact before the ratings, it only took them 13 days to film the movie, and then it took them 2 years in post to do all the VFX because all of the transitions, all of the web browsers, all of that kind of stuff wasn't actually a computer that they were doing it on. It was all done and created by special effects artists on the screen. So
that's so crazy, just so you guys know, because I felt like we'll get into this more, but it felt like you were the computer at times, like staring through the screen back at them. They did so good at that. Like, I just have to highlight that. It was amazing.
And I definitely thought, like, I didn't know that, Vince, and I love this movie. I definitely thought that they had just done, like, they added, like, the video on later, but I thought they just did, like, some screen records or something like that of the laptops and things. So that's super crazy.
That's what I assumed, too, and it seems like the easier way to do it, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I mean, going through the IMDb trivia and looking at, like, all of the minute details in the background throughout the movie, you can tell it, I mean, through that, you can tell it wasn't going to work by just doing screen grabs, because there's a lot of hidden Easter eggs if you pay attention. There's a lot of foreshadowing. There's a lot of even like the twist of the movie, like I read on there that M. Night Shyamalan is referenced in one of the backgrounds or something at some point as a kind of a hint that there's a twist at the end of the movie, you know, and the director's name shows up at one point and just a bunch of stuff. Like, so they went into a lot of details. My favorite of which, I might as well just call it out now, my favorite background Easter egg. So according to IMDb, throughout the movie, various news articles hint that an alien invasion is happening at the same time of the movie.
What the heck?
There you go. Go back and rewatch it. Watch for those things. Apparently, there's a... maybe this is a part of the Cloverfield universe? Who knows? I don't know. It made me laugh. I was just like, oh, that's okay.
That's crazy. I have another one.
Alien invasion, and we're worried about the little girl getting kidnapped.
There you go. I have another one, but I'll wait until we hit the spoiler territory for that. We can get through the movie info first.
Okay. So Rotten Tomatoes, critics have given it 92%, and audiences gave it 87%, and IMDb has given it a rating of 7.6. The movie is starring John Cho as David Kim, Sarah Soan as Pamela Nam Kim, and Deborah Messing as Detective Vic. And that's all I got.
Yeah. Nice. What's crazy is how few actors were in this film, right? And I just want to call it one more thing, and I don't know if you brought this up. I'm sorry, I was taking some notes here, but the film was actually released January 21st, 2018 at Sundance, and then was purchased and then re-released. And this film, right, we talked about it, this had an $880,000 budget and then grossed $75.5 million at the box office, which seems really low. But when you're like, this was a film that had under $1 million budget-wise.
I mean, 75?
They did insane. Really good with this. Ching, 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 ching. Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. And yeah, I read through actually the trivia on IMDb as well. And I think we'll bring some of it up as we kind of go throughout this episode, because there's so many good things that we can talk about after we kind of get to the spoilers section of this movie. But I just kind of wanted to ask before we go into things, Vince, had you seen this movie before?
No, this is my first one. First time seeing this one. I did, however, see both the Unfriended movies that came out before this, which is kind of the same gimmick, but more of in the horror genre than the mystery thrillers genre. And honestly, guys, I know they're not as good movies. I kind of preferred Unfriended over this one. And that's going to be a very controversial thing, because Unfriended 1 was not good and Unfriended 2 was not good either.
Did they get progressively worse?
I don't remember which one was which. One of them had a supernatural aspect to it where it was just like honestly, it was the ghost of Facebook, where this girl gets murdered. Or no, she... I can't remember exactly how it all goes down. Basically, social media bullies her. She dies and she comes back as an internet ghost to kill all the people that had wronged her. I think that was the first one. And just the whole idea of an internet ghost was just absolutely ridiculous. but the second one is called like Unfriended Dark Web. And that one was more of a realistic horror where it's like, yeah, weird things are happening and it's still in the horror genre. But it's like it's not a ghost killing people. They stumble upon something that they weren't supposed to see, and so they start getting killed off one by one. And they do the same thing, but it's a lot more real time. It's more real time than this one is. Like, this one had a lot of zooming in and out and using different, like, computer apps and OS systems, and they just kind of merged them all in together, so it was very seamless. Yeah. In the Unfriended movies, it was basically in real time, so it's like it was as if, like you said, it was as if they're doing a screen grab of a computer. So, like, if the way that they tell the story or fill Dead Space was like through Spotify music, or someone would call on FaceTime, or, you know, so on FaceTime you get the front facing camera and you get the people in there, and then they do like group Zoom meetings or whatever, and you'd see people from the main character's computer being killed off on the monitor. So it never, like, a
2020 movie with all of like the Zoom meetings and stuff, you know.
Yeah, it might not have been Zoom, but it is. It's like a movie ahead of its time. It would have been perfect for right now.
There you go.
These types of movies would be perfect because we're all hidden behind a computer monitor now. I think that I liked those ones better, literally because I'm more of a fan of the horror genre than the crime thriller genre. Because, like I said, they're not great movies, and this one really is. It told a great story in a really interesting, albeit gimmicky way. It's just a better movie altogether. I just really like the horror movies, and I always, when it comes to these mystery type movies like Knives Out, I always feel stupid because I can't figure out who did it at the end.
And so, like, I haven't seen those movies, but I like thinking about it. I think there's good things for both sides of it, because having one that's like a screen grab where it goes in real time and it's just like the full view of the computer is very cool, and it can feel very real just because it's all happening right then. And to be able to keep like a movie going at a pace, like to be able to keep a movie pacing but also have all that stuff happening in real time, so that would like take place over that amount of time, is like amazing and ridiculous. So I think that would be super cool. And then I also did like this one, because it almost, for me, it felt like it maybe looked at those and then took like the next step where it said, yes, this is all going to be on, you know, digital screens and everything like that, but we still want to make it feel like a movie. So there is cinematography in this, like the way that the camera moves around the screen, draws your attention to certain thing, moves in and out, lets you know things subtly just by the words on the screen. I thought it was super interesting that the way that they do it isn't just through like grabbing it. Like I said, it sort of seemed like the next step where they use cinematography and different things to push the story along. And this one, obviously, sort of like we mentioned with like the crime thriller thing where it can take a while. Obviously, this one, it probably wouldn't be very plausible for a real-time one. So I think they probably both have their... I'll have to check it out because I also like the horror genre. So I'll have to check out Unfriended. But just watch, I think they both seem like good ones. Just watch the second one.
Just watch the second one. Don't bother with the first one.
You got it. So, I don't know. Casey, did you have anything else you wanted to say before we hit the spoilers section?
No, man. I think, like, honestly, that this film was just a lot of fun. It was some enjoyable nostalgia from, like, apps from, like, sometimes where they were to what they became. And kind of, like, looking at just so much of this, I like put myself in the shoes of the main character, and it was kind of painful in a way. I'm not going to lie to you. This film, like the first of it, is sappy to sour so fast, and it makes you feel that. Like this show did a good job at that, but we'll dive more into it. I just had a lot of fun with it. I have not seen Unfriended. I'm sorry, Vince. I might have to get on that, but yeah. Let's break spoiler territory. So, guys, going forward, spoilers from now on. If you haven't watched Searching, go back, watch it, then come back and listen to the rest of our podcast. So, let's dive right in. Josh, you want to lead us in the spoiler-free zone?
Definitely. So, super quick, before I forget it, because I definitely will, one of my favorite like little background things was there was sort of like a hint towards the end of the movie, right near the beginning. If I am... So the whole initial sequence goes down, and I want to talk about that in a minute. But one of the first scenes of like after the initial part of the movie,
one of the very first things that he does is open up Google Chrome or something, and there's a news page, and the headline story on the news page was like, man survives for 4 days or something without food or water, like in the desert or something like that. So it was like sort of like a hint towards the end, which you could really only pick up obviously if you'd seen the movie before. Mm-hmm. But this was my second time seeing the movie, so I was like, oh yes, of course, like there it is, they're hinting towards the end. So
also, other spoiler that I picked up really quick since we're talking about that, the word catfish appears in this film like 7 times. I just have to bring that up.
That's what IMDb said. It was like this, you know, Fish and Chips had something, you know, it's a homage to catfish and the mascot was the catfish and all these things that I didn't notice having only seen it the first time, but IMDb was like, trust us, it's there.
Yeah. Well, I saw the catfish like a couple of times, and there's some ads that talk about it. And then like the pop-ups that happen at the first of the movie, like there's a catfish one in there and like stuff like that. It's kind of interesting, but I'll be honest with you guys. I didn't read anything about the film before watching it. All I did was rent it and watch it. And
had you not seen a trailer or anything?
No, nothing.
Oh, like, fun.
I knew nothing about this film. I was expecting something a lot different, to be super honest with you guys.
So are you pretty thrown off with the whole computer monitor style of storytelling, filmmaking?
Yeah, for the first couple of minutes, I really was. It was different, and I didn't know... I genuinely was like, what is this? And I kept expecting him to break away from the actual screen, right? And then when they finally did break away from it for a couple of times, I was like, I don't like this. Go back to the screen, because of the way they set this movie up so well. So yeah, I didn't know anything about this. I just knew that like Josh had recommended it, and that's what I was going for. And so it made it kind of fun. Like, made it more of an adventure in a way. That's what I like about new films sometimes, is either you can go and do a lot of research, or like me, if you're like me, you're just a casual movie fan, you show up to watch. And that's what I did.
They're all super, it's super interesting to be on both sides of it, where you can know a lot about it, and both when you go in sort of blind to it. This was one of the movies that really made me want to start really looking in depth on movies, because So a couple of years ago when this came out in theaters, I had been invited to be a guest on our friend's podcast over at Rogo Tours. And that was like my first ever real interaction with podcasting. Because I had listened to their podcast a lot, and they had, you know, mentioned that people could be on it and stuff. And I really wanted to, you know, be on it and do something. So we were doing a podcast about our favorite Hans Zimmer scores in movies, but you know, they had the whole banter at the beginning where you talk about things you've seen and whatever, and I wanted to like go in with something cool that I had watched or something that was getting good reviews and stuff. So I was like, I'm gonna go see Searching so that I can like talk about this on the podcast with them. And I went and I saw it, and just like everything about it like really stuck out to me, and I was able to really look in depth about a lot of things on it, and it was really, really cool. And so that was like one of my first experiences with podcasting. And then, you know, like sort of the next year, not too long after, is when Casey kind of came to me and Vince with the idea to start the podcast up. So I was, this definitely was like a big film on my, you know, obviously not career, but like my like podcasting, like whatever, it's like a big moment for it. So I loved it. One of my favorite parts of the entire movie is the opening scene. So we can just sort of start from the beginning. What did you guys think about the opening scene? Like, for me, I definitely liked it, and I want to know if you got an Up sort of feel for that opening scene. And like, and you got to be honest, I will tell you straight up that I did. I want to know if it made you cry, because it made me cry.
Wait, are you talking like the Pixar movie Up feel? Is that what you're talking about here?
Like the same, because you know how at the beginning of the Pixar movie Up, they go through like that whole montage where it kind of goes through their life, but spoilers for Up, his wife dies
for the first 5 minutes of Up.
Gosh dang it. Actually, Josh, like, yeah, total Up vibes. Like, this is a note I took right like after that first scene, like, just so you guys can see, like, this is a note on my phone What an intro. All nostalgia, love and fears, a look through the screen, a cool way to look at life. And then I wrote, but loneliness. Like, that's how I felt. Like, I got like that, like almost like, you know, gosh, what's her name from Midsommar? How she's like Andy or whatever. Danny, how she's like, at the end, she like gets that like kind of like pouty, joyful, sad, happy face that you're like, what emotions are you feeling? All of them.
Right.
That was my face. And then I felt like my eyes were a little damp. And I was like, damn it, Josh, it's got me.
I like, yeah. So I definitely cried during the beginning of this movie. And I always felt those up feels. But I also agree with what you said about the nostalgia part of it. Like him pulling up on that freaking Windows 97 screen with like the blue and the profiles on the right side. I was like, throwback. That was my childhood computer right there with like the different profiles and everything.
Yeah, that was the first thing I put in my notes too was, well, they pulled a Pixar's Up on us. You know, like it's exactly the same thing they did in Up to make you care about this family. Really makes you connect with their mom and feel the loss that the main characters are feeling throughout the whole series. And, you know, making you feel more of a part of the family and how it is affecting their relationship towards each other, because you kind of lost this person that you were taught to care for in 5 minutes of movie. You know, it's kind of like, it's exactly like Up, where the first 5 minutes is a better story than a lot of movies that are out there.
I freaking hated that though. Like, that's what's interesting about the storytelling here is how they get you to feel so like involved, like these are your neighbors that you've lived next to for 15 years almost, and you watch them give birth to their kid, and like they like post pictures and videos on their like Facebook page, and you're a part of it, and then they freaking kill off the mom, man. Like I hated that so much. It made me actually like a little bit upset, but like it made me like feel the feels. And I think that's where they hook you on this film, to be honest with you, is that you feel so connected to the family. And like for some reason, loss unites us, right? In a weird way, like we want to be there to support other people. And so that's how they do it, is like this family, this father and daughter are now in a really awkward stage. And here we are watching them through their screens. Really creepy. Like
they did a lot of it through, you know, they had certain points where they would show videos or where, you know, the front-facing camera or whatever turned on so you could see them and what they were doing, taking a picture or whatever. But there's also a lot of it that I was extremely impressed that they did the storytelling without words, just with the stuff on the screen, kind of like they do throughout the rest of the movie. Like when it tells you, you know, like where she goes onto her calendar and she makes like the mom comes home like thing on like event on her calendar. And then like without any words, it just shows, you know, her move it to a later date. And then later on, it shows her just delete it. And it's just like without doing anything, without seeing any people, just being on the screen, seeing what they're doing through these things, it moves the story along. And I thought that was extremely impressive and very, very original.
Yeah, and it's surprising how, like, we talked a lot about how there's a lot of stuff going in the background, you know, emails that you want to read the headlines to, or news articles you want to read, because you're looking for that, you know, those Easter eggs as you're watching it. But it also doesn't become distracting ever. Like, you still care so much about this family that, yeah, you are looking for those little Easter eggs, but really, this relationship with him and his daughter is what holds you in this movie. Well, in the mystery, trying to solve this mystery, but it's like watching the pain through this father's eyes and his realization that he has become so much more disconnected from his daughter than he ever realized. And luckily in the end, we learned that he's not as far connected as we are led to believe throughout the entire thing, but there is this disconnect between the two of them, and they do need to learn how to, like you said, Casey, come together through loss instead of letting this wedge push them farther and farther apart.
I thought about it for a minute before we came in here, and I thought about the garbage in the kitchen and kind of the weird symbolism that that was. And I know, like, when I'm like, I say this garbage in the kitchen, but like, that's how the dad is like weirdly trying to connect with his daughter, is he's like teasing her over the garbage in the kitchen, which is something he easily could have just bagged up and walked out himself, because he walked by the trash multiple times. But it was just kind of like that awkward moment where here's the garbage in the middle of the kitchen. We both see it. We're just like, ah, not mine, not mine, you know, and walk around it and keep going. But that was like his weird way of connecting, is here are the chores, here's the responsibilities, keep it going. And for her, like, we see it later when he's looking at the, like, the live stream service or whatever, where you can stream and share. Like, he walks in and he's just like trying to communicate, and he's like, hey, today is a, and what he probably wants to say is mom's birthday. He's like, Tuesday, it's Tuesday. And it's just like, I can't imagine going through something so terribly hard and just not knowing how to talk about it. But then again, I go through hard things and I shuffle them under the rug myself, and I leave my own trash container in the middle of the kitchen, per se, that we all walk around, if that makes sense. And that's how I feel about it. They kind of like had it there the whole time, but they just didn't know how to approach it and get the task done.
And that's kind of what provided that disconnect, right?
Between, if that makes sense at all.
That makes a lot of sense, dude. That was deep. I'm impressed.
Very.
I was like, where's he going with this? And you brought him back around and hit a homer there.
To throw it back to one of our favorite 2019 movies, it's so metaphorical.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, but for real, like,
yeah, you're definitely right.
That kind of is like what drives their disconnect, right? Is that they, you see later on her like little like movie social media thing, like little live stream thing, is that she just goes on and she wants to talk about her mom because she doesn't get that opportunity with her father, and that he just doesn't talk about it. I mean, you see the difference from beginning to end, like when he first is talking to her about piano and different things like that, and he just can't bring it up at all. And at the very end, you see where he's like, I'm proud of you, and he's finally, you know, he's like, mom would be too, where he's actually finally able to talk about it, is what's really bringing him together. You know, through the midst of this tragedy that happened, it brought him closer and it helped him push through this loss by almost losing everything and realizing what he needed to do.
Yeah. Well, here's a question for you. Like, and this is something I do all the time with simple communication, is I will type out a message and then delete it. Just like they showed that. That is so true to like the time we live in, is like, I have something to say here. Type it out. And then, but do I really want to say it in that way? And they delete it and they show that. And I think that's such a interesting thing, because it shows the dad, who's like an older person who's tech savvy in his own way, because he works for a technology company, but also that the daughter does it on her Facebook page. And so I like took this as like, it's not just a problem of somebody my age. It's a problem of somebody older, somebody younger. Like, we all face these hurdles of how to communicate, how to relay this. And this film hit home in a lot of ways, and it was so good at that. And that's how they keep you engaged, I feel. Not just the mystery of what happened to her, but the real thing of how well do we know each other? How well are we communicating? How well, how well, how well? I don't know. They showed it so well. So I can see why it took 2 years to create the masterpiece that we watched.
This movie, I've probably already mentioned this to you guys when I was talking about it before, or maybe it was just in text, so I don't know. So I want to let everyone know that I love this movie a lot, and I kept thinking about it the entire year, and it just kept my mind going so much, not just because of the story, but also all of the effects that went into it, like the gimmick per se of it being all on screens and everything like that, that when it came down to like my favorite movies of the year, because we did our best of 2019. I did my best of 2018 on Twitter, you know, before we were doing the podcast. This movie only lost out to A Quiet Place in 2018. And there were a lot of good movies in 2018. So this movie was my number two of all of that year. Like, that's how much I liked it. And yeah, there are a lot of other good movies. There was Roma, there was Beautiful Boy, Black Panther, Creed 2. There's a ton of amazing movies that came out this year. This one just blew me away, though. I love it so much. I wanted to ask, let's see, I got a couple of things on here. Like, on the note of it being the gimmick of being all on screens, did you feel like it was too gimmicky? Like, would you watch a movie like this again? Or was it perfect for what it was, but like not another one? Like, what were your thoughts about the gimmick of the screens?
I think without the gimmick, this is just another generic type of movie. You know, like I've seen this on TV, mystery thrillers, how many times, you know, it's a good story. It's really well told. It really makes you care, all those kind of things. But there's nothing really special about the story, except for maybe the twist at the end, where some of the, you know, what are these shows? Criminal Minds and stuff. It's a little bit different. Like Criminal Minds, you can kind of figure out this who did it by the end of the thing pretty easily.
Right.
But that's what makes us stand out, is like it's a genre that's been, we've been doing for so long, and there's so much that's similar to it, that the way that they did this, the gimmick of the computers, really is what makes it stand out above the rest of them, in my opinion.
I'd second that. Like, it brought an element, like a layer of like complexity to this film, because like you look at it and you're like, cool, like I could have just seen this from a camera, right, the whole entire time, and just looked at, you know, John Cho's whole body moving and walking around and, you know, like interacting with the police officer in person and everything like that. But instead, we're seeing it through the screen, how they're texting, sending emails, like those communications, what's going through his mind, like as he like does things. Because we've seen so many movies where people are filing through papers or clicking on the computer, we just can't see it. And like, what's interesting is, no matter who we are, like for some reason screens are still like their eye catchers. And so being the reverse of watching from the screen going out is like a different experience. And I think that that's what made this film stand out to me, is because you're seeing it from, you know, David, from the cop, from her friends and what they're posting, what they're saying, from her as like the mystery unfolds, and until eventually like he gets to the end where he figures it out. He even like buys cameras to record his brother and question his brother because he thinks something fishy is going on, and like all these different things, it's all shown through screens. And I think that's pretty cool. It really brought that element of complexity that I would want in a like a new feel on an old genre.
I have to also bring up kind of, I mean, we talked about the catfishing a little bit, but also just, it shows how easy it is to, and how all of us are trying to be something. Okay, I guess I shouldn't say all of us, but it shows that a lot of us are trying to be or present ourselves a certain way through social media. And also it kind of like dabbles in kind of the dark side of people attention seeking. You know, when she goes missing, David calls up all of her old like study group and is asking them questions, you know, or like their friends and where they're going camping, and he's like trying to find her. And one of the girls from the study group is like, I don't know her, I don't really care about her, I just want to get a good grade because I want to get into college next year. And then when all of a sudden this case gets on the news and becomes like famous across the states, all of a sudden the same girl is being interviewed by a reporter saying, you know, she was my best friend, and she was in tears because she wants that, you know, that clout, that internet recognition. She wants people to look her way and feel bad for her, and she's making the disappearance of this girl who she really never really cared about all about her, and look at me and how hurt I am over this, when in the first place she really didn't care. So it's kind of, I don't know, social media is a mixed bag, right? Social media has done a lot of great stuff. It's brought a lot of people together, but it's kind of a double-edged sword. And I think it did a really good job of kind of showing that throughout the movie.
And just going off of that, right, there's the girl who like posts the kind of like the sappy, like, oh, pity me because I'm her friend. There's also that guy who the dad's suspicious of the entire time, who like posts like, not a big deal, she was just getting that money for her pimp, she's with me type thing. Remember that? And like, how gross that was. And like, trolling to the max here, like just being despicable. Like, I don't know, like that happens all the time. Like, it's super interesting, and like, I'm not trying to call people out or anything like that, but more of like a, I guess, like it makes you think a little bit about the way you act, because if anybody was like, that guy's cool, you should probably reevaluate your life, because it's not a funny thing to like joke about, like especially in such a hard and stressful situation for someone who's already lost their wife, but now losing their kid, and then you're just making a joke to like be a jerk. I don't know. It's kind of crazy. Clout. Yeah.
And I guess just to like wrap up my thought on social media being a double-edged sword within the context of this movie, I mean, you see all these things that we just talked about, but then also if it wasn't for social media and if it wasn't for computers and emails and stuff, he never would have solved this case. You know, he kept using all this stuff, all this technology that we have in order to find his little girl who was stuck in a ditch somewhere. And, you know, he never could have gotten to where he was if it wasn't for the same tool that kind of caused her to get into that position. So, like I said, it's an interesting, social media is just an interesting thing on both sides of the sword, the double edge.
The internet's a weird place, man.
And you like the way that it moves forward with everything, you know, he goes through the Facebook contacts and he finds her video profile or her Tumblr and different things like that. And so that is sort of like we talked before, that it doesn't just use the screens as a gimmick, but it really does use it to push and move along the story. It's not just there to be its own thing. It moves it forward through the screens, through the social media accounts, through everything that happens. And it can both tug on our emotions with him like going through his daughter's computer and finding things with his wife and everything like that. But also it just is really brilliant the way that it does that. And it moves through and it lets us see everything in a way that helps us move along the story without words needing to be seen, without actors having to say anything. It's just really incredible. And there's so many things that, you know, and it's so brilliantly done that the next time you watch it, kind of like Ben said, you can pay a little more attention to like the Easter eggs and everything, but it really just keeps you involved the first time through with the story and trying to make sure everything happens and trying to make sure that the family ends up okay. One of the Easter eggs that I just wanted to mention, because there are a ton, obviously, in this movie, is that when he goes to the lake to try and find her or whatever, he calls Vic, or he texts her, he said, Vic, whatever, or something. He's like, I know where they are, and or she is, or something like that, but he doesn't say where he's going. But then he video calls her, and she answers, and she says, hey, are you at the lake? Even though he hadn't, like, said anything about it yet, which was, like, an early clue to, hey, like, she's kind of behind all of it, and it's super interesting. And there's stuff like that all over the movie. Was there any other sort of Easter egg things that you guys had seen or wanted to bring up? Because there's so many and we could spend, you know, hours just talking about those things. So I wanted to see what maybe some of your guys' favorite ones are or stuff you saw.
See, this is the problem. I saw nothing. I cannot solve these mysteries for the life of me. I try and I try and I try to be the first one to solve the murder, to solve who did it. And there's stuff like that where it's just like so obvious now that even when I'm doing my hardest to try to figure this stuff out, it just goes completely over my head.
Well, and don't worry. I definitely didn't see that the first time I watched it. It was this time going around that I was like, I see what you did there. Like, very interesting.
And something I kind of noticed, but like after looking through some of the trivia and stuff, is when the dad's going through the address book, the mom is carefully noted down every single person and some interesting facts about them. The trivia states, and this is something I saw afterwards, is that like the boy who is the killer, or like who pushes her down the cliff by accident or whatever, he actually is in the note cards, and it talks about him being weird and having a crush and that her mom is a cop. And I thought that was kind of interesting. I was like, oh, that's interesting. That's like a clever mom right there, like especially in today's technology and world. But also, I'd have caught it had I not looked back at it. But I was like, this mom is really detailed, because I think my mom mentally notes details down, but I don't think she ever like kept a note card of all my friends type thing, even a digital one. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah. I wish that I could claim that I figured this out like way ahead of time, but it didn't, you know, it did what the movie was supposed to do, where it's like putting together the puzzle pieces as the story is wrapping up. But the story about Vic's son who, you know, did something out of character and went and stole $25 from everybody around the neighborhood, using that as foreshadowing as this kid has a history of doing weird stuff, kind of, you know, not okay things, was what caused me 2 minutes before they actually say, oh, the kid did it, you know, or she did it for the kid, you know, as she's being arrested, I'm putting that together in my head as they're doing the funeral scene at the end where the cops all come in. I'm like, oh, okay, so she's the one who did it, and I guarantee she did it because of her skeezy kid. For, and then they start like explaining it, and I wish I would have put that together 30 minutes earlier, but it's literally like 5 minutes, 2 minutes before they explain it to you step by step that I realized and put it together for myself.
Yeah. It took me a minute to kind of like piece it together. But going off of that, the mom even admits to have taken the fall and going around telling people that, yeah, I created this. I did this, you know, and it's kind of interesting. Also, I didn't realize this until the end of the movie. And obviously, I think that's the way it's designed. How when he was looking at the mom's Facebook profiles beforehand as well, and there's her cover photo of her building the whatever with, you know, the people who've been released, there's the photo of the guy next to it. I like thought that was cool that they pretty much set up all the clues in the beginning of the film that you needed. And that's, I guess, going off what you're saying is like they catfished us for this film. Like they gave us everything we needed and then they showed it to us at the end as it really was, but also with that third final twist. They're like, ooh, it was good.
And thank goodness they did it that way, because there's nothing worse than watching one of these whodunit type movies where they don't give you anything ahead of time. And then they're just all of a sudden like, it's the butler. It's like, well, how was I ever supposed to solve that? Except for at the end when you walk us through all these things, you know? So they did this did a really good job of, if you pay attention and you're good at this type of stuff, then you can solve it before the rest of us do. But I have to say, I did really like the twist of, you know, not knowing whether or not she really did run away with his money. Like Detective Vic, she really told a story that I could believe. And I was starting, as I was watching it, I was starting to believe like, oh, maybe she really was involved in some kind of drug ring, or maybe she really is running away. Like all this stuff that she'd implanted into your head, she did her research and she hid it really, really well. And it was very believable. And I'm glad it wasn't what happened. I'm glad that this dad wasn't as disconnected from his daughter as we were led to believe. And I'm glad at the end of the movie, he was able to save her and, you know, move forward with their lives together and become more open and accepting of the tragedy that happened to them. And the people who deserved it got their comeuppance.
I've never heard of comeuppance before.
Never, ever, Case?
Never. I've heard of come up, but never comeuppance.
Oh, gosh.
But it was movie, good.
It twists and turns, and that's part of what keeps it going the whole time. Like, there's probably some people who thought maybe it, like, turned direction too much, but I thought it was perfect. You know, it leads you one way because it's sort of like you're kind of put in his position in the father's journey where you think you know her, and then, oh, she stopped taking piano lessons. Oh, she's taking all this money out. Did she really run away? But that's not who she is. Is it this person? Oh no, this guy came forward and confessed. And it just really goes all over the place, but it keeps you guessing the whole time while slowly hinting, and then you get the big reveal at the end, and it's super crazy. Definitely just insane.
I mean, even the fish and chips girl, where, you know, it's starting to lead you to believe like this fish and chips girl's really, you know, she's really suspicious, and then it takes a 180 and it's like, oh no, we checked her out, it wasn't her. And I was like, oh, I thought I got this. And then I did have it the whole time, you know?
And you're like, but it was.
You tricked me. You double tricked me.
I loved that part, by the way. Once he kind of realizes that this is like a stock footage thing and they like does the research, that like part was a part where I was like, oh, man, this is whack.
You're like, it's getting crazy up in here. Another one of the the cool things that that was on the IMDb trivia was the fish and chips girl, which is, you know, ends up being Robert, the one lady's son, right? He says his favorite Pokemon is Kecleon, and I don't know Pokemon super well because it could be said a different way.
That is not one of the original 151, so I do not know.
So I guess it still is one, I guess. But basically, what it is, Kecleon is it's a Pokemon that resembles a chameleon and it can camouflage itself. So it alludes to the fact of him concealing his identity with her as well. So there's like so many of those things that you could like keep on going on about it, but it's insane. It's super crazy. So there's too many things that I could say about this movie that would just be all in praise. There's definitely nitpicks that can go along with, you know, any sort of movie, but if you guys want to say some, I'll be fine with that. But I think I'll just keep any nitpicks to myself because I love it.
No, I have no nitpicks about this film. I'll be honest with you. Like, this is where my casual moviegoer, like, I love this movie comes in, because this one, like I said, had some depth, had some good story building, and it was fun to watch from a different angle. So for me, this film was like delicious. It was great. Well done. Well done, team.
There you go. Any final thoughts about the movie before we wrap up, guys?
I'm interested to see where it takes us next with the style, the progression, like you said, you know, going from Unfriended. Well, I'd even say before Unfriended, going from like Paranormal Activity,
right?
You know, doing, it's kind of a found footage, but through the house cameras, doing Paranormal Activity to Unfriended to now this, like, what is the next progression in this genre of movie? Who's going to be the next one to take it up, do something interesting?
It's very interesting, but you have to be careful to not just do verbatim the previous thing, otherwise it's oversimplified and just, you know, copying, and it probably wouldn't be that interesting because it's not new. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I definitely agree with you that someone can take this to the next step and it'll be super cool. Like you said, who is it gonna be, what's it gonna be? I'll definitely go see it though.
The key is you have to, like, there's a book I always reference all the time. If you guys have heard me reference it, it's Still Like an Artist by Austin Kleon. You just have to like twist it just enough to where like it's not Paranormal Activity, it's not Unfriended, it's not Spotlight Now, or Searching, sorry. It's not Searching. It's its own thing where it has its twist, and who knows? Like, I'm curious. I think it'll be super interesting because, like, think about it. Like, with the combination of so many people having like Google Homes, Alexa, like, we have Siri in our pocket. Maybe, who knows, like, Siri becomes the next horror monster type thing. Like, you know, like, Siri, did it.
It's kind of,
hello, Vince.
Yeah. It's kind of like, they kind of did that in, oh gosh, what's that old space movie? Space Odyssey? Is that the one?
Space 2001 is Space 2001? Odyssey?
Is that the one that's got the talking house? Anyway, that's beside the point. It kind of depends on the story, right? I mean, we saw it in Palm Springs this summer. They took the Groundhog's Day formula and kind of revolutionized it, in my opinion, by telling a story that really applied to that genre. So, you know, they tried doing the haunted internet. They tried doing the dark web internet. Now they've tried doing the mystery thriller. What's the next story that really applies to the computer monitor genre? Be interesting to see.
Yeah. Huh. I have nothing else, Josh. Do you got anything else you want to drop? Any nuggets?
Just that I love this movie. I'm super glad that you guys were cool with watching it. And I'm glad that we could all sit down and talk about it. Like, I know that a lot of people might think I'm crazy for putting it as my number two movie of 2018, but I stand by that until today. It was super interesting, very thoughtful. And even though we didn't mention it a lot because a lot of it just happens on screens, great performances. As well, like John Cho did an excellent job, just all around very, very good film, very interesting, keeps it moving, very thoughtful, made me cry both at the beginning and then I will say also at the end, sort of when he has his little like message with his daughter and you see the picture of them and she changes the picture to one of them together, just very thoughtful, very emotional, and I loved it from beginning to end. And that's all I'll say. If somehow you listen to this entire podcast without seeing the movie, you know, not shame on you because I'm glad you listened to the podcast, but you should definitely go see the movie. And now that you sort of already know the end, you can look for all those little Easter eggs in the middle as you enjoy Anish's, I'm not even going to try his last names, searching.
Bingo. Go for it. Yeah. So, folks, thank you for tuning in. Josh, thanks for a great movie pick. I had a lot of fun with this one. I think I'm going to go into more movies blind as we choose movies I haven't seen. So I enjoyed it. As always, Vince and Josh, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast and being a fun team on this one. It's just a nice way to, you know, still connect and get together as friends, you know, virtual hug here. Oh, love it. But on the other hand, folks, as always, thank you for your support and watching our podcast. Please go ahead and give us a follow on social, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, as well as to our website, prppodcast.com. And then if you want to go listen to our podcast and check out some of the rad artwork and thumbnails Vince has been creating, you can check us out on YouTube, Pause, Run, Play Podcast as well. And as always, join us next time.